Wilton Norman Chamberlain was larger than life, literally. He was 7'1" tall, weighed 265 pounds, and he was an amazing athlete, the only player to ever score 100 points in a game. Even against the Knicks, that doesn't seem humanly possible. And he claimed to have had sex with 20,000 women, which also seems humanly impossible. Gary M. Pomerantz's book about him, Wilt 1962, The Night of 100 Points and the Dawn of a New Era, is published by Crown, and it brings Mr. Pomerantz to my show today. Hello.
How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Your previous books were about the city of Atlanta and its racial conscience and about an airplane crash. So should I be surprised now that you've written about Wilt Chamberlain?
Well, yeah, I guess that takes me up into the sky with Wilt. You know, what I do is really a hybrid of history and journalism. And I try to bring the best of both, you know, to the page, try to bring the urgency and daily relevance of journalism and the sweep of history.
So you try to put March the 2nd, 1962, the day he scored 100 points, in context. What was going on at that time?
Well, it was a very different time. 1962 is a long time ago. And you know, you have going on in the nation at that time the slow rupture of legal segregation. Kennedy and Khrushchev are locked in their Cold War struggle over nuclear testing. And John Glenn, only 10 days before Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game, had returned from orbit with this classic line. He said, "What can you say about a day in which you see four beautiful sunsets?" And so, you know, the NBA, too, was very different. I mean, forget the glamour and the glitz of today's NBA. Many sports writers perceived the NBA of that time as little more than a lounge act. You had players smoking cigarettes sometimes at halftime. The players would have to wash their own uniforms, sometimes in their hotel room sinks.
Carry their own bags,
absolutely. And you know, the NBA tried to grow new fans back in that time by playing games in outlying areas, which is why this game in March of 1962 between the Knicks and the Philadelphia Warriors was played in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the famous chocolate town.
In Pennsylvania Dutch territory. So how many of them came out to see basketball games? Did the Warriors, then the team of Philadelphia, before they moved to San Francisco, did they play a lot of games in Hershey?
They played three games that year in Hershey. And, of course, the official crowd count that night when Wilt scored his 100 points was 4,124. The arena held 8,000, so it was about half full. And Philadelphia sports writers well knew that the team owner, Eddie Gottlieb, inflated his numbers a little bit. And just because Gottlieb himself was round didn't mean that his crowd estimates were round. So it was 4,124, and that did not include the local Hershey kids, the chocolate factory worker sons, who snuck into the game that night and using the usual methods.
So there wasn't a lot of money to be made. They couldn't have supported the kinds of salaries that we see today. But Wilt was paid pretty well, wasn't he, for the time?
Certainly he was. He earned $75,000 a year, the most of any player in the NBA, and this at a time when the average American worker was making about $5,000.
He quit college early, wound up playing with the Globetrotters. But in those days, there was you could draft the local players. So he was a Philadelphia kid, and he wound up with the Philadelphia team.
One of the great stories about Eddie Gottlieb, who was one of the NBA's founding fathers, was that—
Founding skinflints as well.
Founding skinflints, yes. Eddie Gottlieb was a rumpled Jewish man from the old world, and he had, in fact, owned a team in Philadelphia called the Philadelphia Spas. SPAH, you know, South Philadelphia Hebrew Association team. They wore the Jewish star on their chest during the 30s and 40s. And the Spas used to say that Eddie Gottlieb was so frugal that he would pay them in the dark. So as he slapped the bills into their hands, they couldn't read the denominations. Gottlieb used to come up to games in Madison Square Garden, and he timed his departure from Philadelphia so that he'd get here right about the time the parking meters were expiring around Madison Square Garden.
Meanwhile, we have Wilt scoring 100 points in a game. It doesn't really seem close to possible. You compare it to Babe Ruth's 60 home run season, but that's been broken any number of times since. And what is the next highest scoring total in NBA history?
Well, what's interesting about this is Wilt's 100-point game is truly the Everest of sports records. It's never been approached. In fact, teams today, as you watch the NBA playoffs, teams aren't scoring 100 points.
Because defense is tightened up.
Yeah, and 100 points is just a superhuman, you know, comic book kind of superhero at work. No one else in the NBA has ever scored 90 or 80 or even 75. The next highest is 73 points by David Thompson of Denver in 1978.
That's pretty impressive. How many did Jordan score in his best game?
Jordan's best game was 69 points, and that was in overtime.
And we have Wilt averaging over 50 points a game in that season, the 61-62 season. Only a few players, as you point out, have scored more than 50 points in a few games. I remember Bernard King did it a couple of times with the Knicks, and it made headlines.
Yes, it did. It's a big deal. Allen Iverson, you know, hit the 50s, and a number of players are hitting the 50s. But to give you some idea of how far above and beyond Wilt's numbers loom, you know, look at it this way. Wilt averaged 50 points per game, 50.4 that season. The next highest number in an NBA full season was by Michael Jordan, 37.1 points per game. Okay, so Jordan would have had to inflate that total by 36%. Okay, now, here's the comparative number. If you take one of the other revered numbers in sports, Ted Williams hitting .406 in baseball, to go 36% above that, someone would have to hit .552. That's how far Wilt stands above the rest.
Was his team, the Philadelphia Warriors, favored to win this game?
They were favored, according to the betting line, by 11 points in Hershey.
So the Knicks weren't exactly the strongest team at that time.
The Knicks were a last-place team, but there's a little bit of an untruth about this game, and that untruth goes like this, you know, that, Wilt scored 100 points, but the Knicks were a terrible team. It was like playing sixth graders. It's just not true. I mean, the Knicks had three starting players who were NBA All-Stars that year. The great guard, Richie Guerin, Willie Nahls, a forward, fine shooter, and jumping Johnny Green. And additionally, they had a young second-year center named Darrell Imhoff. Now, Imhoff was 6'10 and had won a gold medal with the United States Olympic team in 1960 in Rome and won a national championship at California in college. So some good players.
And another player, Cleveland Buckner, scored over 30 points in that game. Richie Guerin, Cleveland Buckner, and Willie Nahls. The final score was 169 to 147, not exactly a defensive battle. But none of Wilt's teammates scored over 17 points. So were they just feeding the ball on every play?
Not on every play, but, you know, the game opened up this way. I mean, Wilt had 18 in the first half. He had, 18 in the first quarter, 23 in the second. So at the halftime, he's got 41. You know, that's a lot of points. But still.
But often players tire, and then they wind up with 50 or 60 as
exactly,
a result.
Exactly right. But then he scored 28 in the third quarter. So now he goes into the final quarter with 69 points. And it was really, you know, several minutes in when it started to get exciting, because the record at that time was Wilt's at 78 points in a triple overtime game. Okay, so when he breaks that record, the famous PA announcer Dave Zinkoff, who during this game was at halftime giving away free salamis, Foremost mm-hmm. brand salamis, and cigars to fans. He starts, with his, Wilt Chamberlain has just broken the record, 79 points. You know, now it's Dipper Dunk Chamberlain, and he's lighting it up.
And it was all dunks?
No, that too is not true. Wilt, we know from the fourth quarter play-by-play, tape from WCAU Radio in Philadelphia, made a wide array of shots in the fourth quarter. Putbacks, turnaround bank shots, which was, of course, his favorite shot. There were some so-called dipper dunks, but even one shot out near the arc, 23, 24 feet, and you could hear the shock in Bill Campbell, the announcer's voice, saying, Wilt saying, what am I doing out here? And it's, there were still 8 minutes to play, and Campbell answered his own question saying, he knows what he's doing out there. He's going for 100.
And he missed a few shots, too, although his shooting percentage was very high. You mentioned Darrell Imhoff. He was 6'10". That means that Wilt had a 3-inch advantage. Also, Darrell Imhoff only played 20 minutes because he fouled out of the game. And Wilt played the full 48 minutes.
Yes, Wilt averaged 48.5 minutes per game that season, which is quite an amazing number when you consider games are only 48 minutes long. Mm. But there were a number of overtime games. He played all but 8 minutes and 33 seconds of the entire season, and he only missed that because he was thrown out of a game by a referee for arguing.
Now, is that extraordinary as it sounds? Because it is a different time. When you think of today's game, for example, there's Yao Ming, who's 5 inches taller than Wilt, but doesn't seem to be able to score at will. Is it because defenses are better?
No, it's because Wilt didn't want to come out. You know, he wanted to be in the game at every moment. Eddie Gottlieb decided that Wilt was his meal ticket, and he wanted Wilt to produce big numbers.
Now, there have been many arguments over the years over who the best basketball player is, even who the best center is. Some people will tell you it's Bill Russell rather than Wilt Chamberlain. And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar made a good case for himself with all the scoring he did. I think if you ask most people today, they'll say it's Michael Jordan. But I suspect you disagree.
I do disagree. And all of those other players you mentioned are terrific players, and they belong rightfully in basketball's Hall of Fame. But I think when you take on Wilt, you need to take him on in context. That is to say, Wilt Chamberlain is the single most transformative player in the game's history.
More than Bill Russell, who supposedly made the game so much more of a defensive battle?
Well, I would say this about Russell. Comparing Russell to Wilt is a bit like comparing the moon to the sun. You know, Russell was surrounded by stars. He's the moon. He had, in this season alone, 5 Hall of Fame teammates, plus the Hall of Fame coach, Red Auerbach. But Wilt stands alone. I mean, Wilt is so brilliant with his talent, you almost have to shield your eyes. And again, remember the time he came in. People would diminish this 100-point game. But it's my contention that the 100-point game and that season in 1961-62, where he averaged 50 points, changed the game. It changed the game in how it would be played, and also by the men who would play it. That is,
in what way?
Yeah, it changed the game and how it would be played, in that when Chamberlain came to the NBA, it was still largely a horizontal game. He made it vertical. He took it above the rim and made it his.
A lot of guys are still throwing up two-handed set shots.
That's true.
The jump shot is what has changed the game as much as anything.
Yes, and another factor as well. And when I say changing the men who would play it, there was unquestionably in the 1950s and into the early 60s, in other words, during this period, a quota in the NBA that limited the number of African-American players initially to 1 or 2 per team and then 3 and 4. And you know, at this time, the Philadelphia Warriors had 11 players. They had 8 white players and 3 African-Americans. And I think what Wilt did to that quota that season, and specifically in Hershey, was symbolically blow that quota to smithereens.
Well, actually, of those players, Paul Arizin, who is in the Hall of Fame, chosen as one of the 50 best players of all time some years back. Tom Gola, also in the Hall of Fame. And then the 2 other black players, Al Attles, who became a much more successful coach than Wilt ever was, and Guy Rogers. That's a pretty good team.
It is a pretty good team. You must remember, though, certainly at that time, Paul Arizin was at the very end of his wonderful career. Tom Gola is in the Hall of Fame largely because of his college career. Remember, it's not the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. So there are many college stars there as well. This is not to diminish the talent of Gola and Arizin, wonderful players. This is just to say Russell was surrounded by just this constellation of stars.
What about his coach, Al McGuire?
Frank McGuire. Yes, Frank McGuire.
A New Yorker.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Greenwich Village. He was a dandy from Greenwich Village.
And who was coaching the Knicks at that time?
Eddie Donovan was in his rookie year. He'd come from St. Bonaventure, and he had a rough night that night. You know, he was coaching what was really an uncoachable game because, you know, look, Daryl Imhoff has been unfairly fingered as the Al Downing of this game. Al Downing, the pitcher who gave up Henry Aaron's record-breaking home run that sent him past the Babe. Imhoff fouled out in only 20 minutes that night. And 6 fouls in 20 minutes against Wilt. And let me say one thing, too, about Imhoff. Imhoff is now at the United States Basketball Academy out at Oregon. And there's a basketball court there. And I said, Daryl, could you go stand over here down low by the key? I said, I want you to show me how you defended Wilt that night. Now, I'm a very poor stand-in for the Big Dipper, for Wilt Chamberlain. I'm 5'10".
You don't call him Wilt the Stilt.
No, never Wilt the Stilt, because he hated that and because he said it reminded him of a big crane standing in a pool of water. Well, Imhoff stood behind me. And he said, you know, Wilt would lean back with his torso, and I would try to fight him off. And it was, I felt like a tree was about to fall on me. And I said, well, what would you do? He said, well, I take the point of my elbow, his right elbow, and I thrust it into Wilt's the middle of his back. And he showed me. It hurt. I mean, Daryl,
but they must have been embarrassed by what had happened to them. I mean, they knew this was an extraordinary thing that they'd allowed. Now, Wilt was a private man, and yet he boasted that he'd had sex with 20,000 women. First of all, why reveal that? And is it possible? Simple math. I actually wound up doing the math. Tells me that if he had sex every day from the age of 16 to his death at 63, he would have still fallen 3,000 days short of one different woman every day. Mm-hmm. No repeats.
Yeah.
Was he just exaggerating?
Look, the shorthand summary of Wilt's life, and of course he died in 1999 at the age of 63. He died of a heart attack at his home in Bel Air, California. But the shorthand summary of his life can be seen in two numbers, 20,000 and 100. The 20,000, as you say, for this boast of 20,000 women, and the 100 from the game in Hershey. And Wilt was afflicted with a Goliath syndrome. He had this nearly obsessive need to prove his greatness in all things, big and small. And so that same need in March of 1962 to bend not only the New York Knickerbockers, but really an entire sport to his will, transformed decades later into this need to boast of sexual conquest, this mythmaker's boast of 20,000 women. And that was sad, really, very sad. Because in his last years, it reduced him to caricature and parody. And needless to say, one of those numbers can be proven and the other can't.
Now, he came from a poor neighborhood in Philadelphia, and yet he was a Republican. He voted for Richard Nixon. The only other, I think I know two or three other NBA players, African-Americans, who admit to being Republicans. Greg Anthony, who's now out of the game. Charles Barkley's now out of the game. Was he really a Republican?
Well, let's remember, too, that Jackie Robinson was a Republican. And we've got to remember the time. Jackie Robinson was a Republican in part during that period of time because of those Southern Democrats. You know, he was at war with them, and rightfully so. Wilt was like most athletes in the early 60s. He was not out there. The African-American athletes were still rather quiet in 1962. Jackie Robinson was already retired 5 years. He was working for Chock Full of Nuts, the chain of coffee shops. And he had a very supportive boss who was effectively subsidizing his civil rights work. So Jackie Robinson was in Rhode Island, for instance, speaking out against discrimination in public housing. And he's marching in civil rights marches in Washington and at NAACP events in Jackson, Mississippi. Wilt wasn't, but really almost no other active professional black athletes were at that time. When you think of 1962, it's very different than the later 60s, the time of Vietnam protests and street revolution.
How did he die?
Well, he died of a heart attack, and he died alone. And I have to tell you that during my work on this book, I felt his loneliness profoundly. Obviously, I didn't have the chance to interview Wilt. But he died alone in bed at his mountaintop castle in Bel Air, where he had a retractable ceiling that gave him a triangular view of the heavens. But I even felt his loneliness during this game. You know, three things have to happen, really, for someone to be able to have such a night as this, 100 points. Number one, you have to have a player with an outstanding offensive, superior skill. Number two, you have to have an opponent who's vulnerable in that area where the player, the offensive scorer, is strongest. But lastly, and this may sound obvious, but you need teammates who are willing to go along with it. And that's what the Philadelphia Warriors did. And as I went around the country and found a number of these teammates and interviewed them, what I discovered is really none of them knew Wilt.
Gary M. Pomerantz has written Wilt, 1962, The Night of 100 Points and the Dawn of a New Era. The game, by the way, was not televised, which tells you something. The book is published by Crown. Thank you so much for being with us.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on the show.